You're listening to the Huddle Up Podcast with Chad Jensen and Zach Kelberman. Join Broncos Country's deep divers at milehighhuddle.com and sound off. And now it's time to drop some knowledge.
So welcome in, everybody. It's the Mile High Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Jensen. With me, my fellow football priest, you know him, you love him, Zach Kelberman. Zach, did the Denver Broncos kind of assuage some of the fears that people maybe had coming out of that Buffalo game last night?
Can I ask you all now, is it okay to breathe? Can we step off the ledge at least 1 foot? The Broncos won a preseason game. I think they came out, Chad, and corrected a lot of the errors that plagued them against Buffalo, the rushing offense for one, the offense, the play calling, the coaching, Nathaniel Hackett's timeout usage. I mean, there's so many positive things to take away, but hopefully those that were putting so much onus and stock into preseason can feel good about what the Broncos did yesterday.
Yeah, it was a very definitive performance. And like I was saying leading into the game, like, in a perfect world, yeah, you want your team to win anytime they take the field. But I didn't care if the Broncos won. What I wanted to see was like some intensity, some recognition of A, how bad they were the game prior, and B, like for the individual players, like, you know what, you got things on the line, my dogs. And it was kind of cool. Multiple player comments after the game, including Nick Benito, made it clear that their pride got challenged by the coaches after the Buffalo game, breaking down the film of just how bad it was. And their pride got challenged, and they answered the bell. And so props to them. I love it. From the twos and the threes, stepping up, saying, no, that's not us. It was a bad day at the office. Everybody chill. Let me show you why you should chill. So that was very encouraging for me. And then just, hey, we saw the running game come alive. Zach, I've been harping on that for 2 weeks now. Love it.
Free Mike Boone. We've been saying this, and even Scott included when I've podcasted with him. This guy has juice. This guy can play. He looked electric out there. He was pretty incredible. So in the regular season, I hope he can get some carries in that crowded backfield. But shouts out to the beleaguered players like Nick Benito, McTelvin Najim, guys that were being criticized harshly and rightly so after the first couple preseason games. I mean, Benito looked like a whirling dervish out there, to use your term, Chad. Baron Browning looked like prime Von Miller out there, stunning and causing game-changing plays. I was very encouraged by what I saw, and hopefully this translates into week one at Seattle.
It is going to be Geno. It is going to be Geno Smith. Tell, for fans who aren't, of course, reading Seattle press clippings every day, Zach, what was the final straw that led to the Geno Smith decision?
You know, I think I'm ready, Chad, to finally jump off the lock bandwagon. Not that I was on it after the trade, but I said to myself, listen, maybe he'll have a fresh start in Seattle. Maybe it's what he needed, but he comes out there. He knows his starting job's on the line, and he throws two interceptions. Did you see the game?
No.
Or at least the highlights of the game? He threw two really bad picks where he just telegraphed the first read, threw it right to the defender. It's same old Drew Lock, but he followed that up with a long touchdown bomb. So he really hasn't grown to me as a quarterback in this. Yeah, very up and down, very volatile. That's always going to be the case. But the Broncos have to worry about the Seahawks starting quarterback in week one, and that's Geno Smith, of all people. Can't wait.
I thought the word that you've used of late to describe Drew Lock, the quarterback, by the way, Andrew, good to see you, bro. Appreciate the support as always, my friend. He says, what's up? I'm happy with the effort. Yes, that was the most important thing to me. I just wanted to see effort, and then we'll get into some other things too, but appreciate you, Andrew. But the word that you've been using to describe Drew Lock, the quarterback, is erratic. And he proved that. When something's erratic, the way I interpret that is it performs in a way that you cannot predict. And NFL coaches, you know what? They like to minimize the chance game as much as they possibly can. And so you look at like a Vic Fangio up against it last year, knowing that, hey, if I don't win this season, I'm hitting the bricks. You can understand the logic that went into the decision to start Teddy Bridgewater, whether you agree with it or not. You can understand the logic, but I don't want to bog this podcast down talking about Drew Lock, Zach.
I mean, he's not our problem anymore. To me, though, it wasn't the interceptions. Those are bad enough in a preseason game. Again, though, it's the context of the interception, throwing it right to the guy, locking onto your first read, never growing as a quarterback. It's the same things that plagued him in Denver are plaguing him in Seattle. Maybe we'll see him, though, in week one. We don't know.
Sam Bam with a super chat that I want to get to, and then I've got some fun scratch and sniff to show everybody. I think it'll make for a good combo. Good to see you, brother. Appreciate you. Did you get your swag yet? You should have gotten it by now, I would think. Maybe end of the week. If you haven't gotten it by now, you're probably going to get it on your doorstep tomorrow, would be my guess. But thank you so much for everything you do supporting MHH, Sam. He says, good evening, Chad and Zach. I thought the Broncos looked solid last night. Very encouraged. Do you think the Broncos keep Brett Rippon and Josh Johnson as backups or just one? Hashtag let Russ cook. Zach.
Can we delve into this for a second, Chad? Sure. Maybe you disagree about Brett Rippon. I know his stat line looked pretty good. And take away even the interception in the end zone, which I thought was a bad decision. His passes, his completions were off target. Am I the only one who noticed that? He was way high or wide. It wasn't on the money. That's supposed to be his calling card as well. So I wasn't overly impressed with Brett Rippon, and that pick in the end zone kind of sealed the deal for me. Conversely, Johnson came into the game. It looks like he can manage the offense. And we're not talking about a QB1 here. We don't have to worry about that anymore. This is for a backup, and I want a backup to at least be competent, can at least make NFL-level throws, and I feel like Johnson's that guy. So, no, to answer the question, though, Sam, it's one or the other. Me, yeah. I'm keeping JJ, but we'll see what the Broncos
see. And I agree, only one, but I'm going to take Rippon. I was ambivalent on this subject for most of the summer, but after watching them both kind of duel it out in the preseason, I'm landed on Rippon for only one reason, and that is a modicum of upside. A modicum, not to say that he's got like franchise QB in the waiting in the wings or anything, but he's young. He's still got potential. And Josh Johnson, you know, he's 36. He is what he is. But I think, and Eric did a good job bringing this up last night, Zach, we ended up running the numbers, which quarterback produced the most points this preseason. And believe it or not, Rippon did by about a touchdown over Josh Johnson. But I want to come back to what you said on the ball placement thing, because it was bad. His receivers were bailing him out. I'm talking about Brett Rippon. And that pick in the end zone, it's like, hey, first of all, props to you, Brett. You started that game in a terrible situation on the 3-yard line to open the game. You drive all the way down. I mean, you're within spitting distance of pay dirt, and you made a bad decision. Not maybe a bad decision, Zach, because that DB did make a good play on the ball, but the ball was way too inside. It was way off target. And then, boom, luck of the draw, it pops up in the air. And you could have counted to like 6 Mississippi before it came down. And so that was easy to pluck out of the air for the defender there. But I know it's a little, I mean, like you said, Zach, who cares? Not to say who cares, but we're talking about, as far as the stakes this time, we're talking about QB2. Thank the football gods.
Yeah, I'll say I don't care. I mean, I have no really horse in this race. If the Broncos keep Rippon as the backup, great. If it's Johnson, great. I'll roll with it either way. I just want there to be a fair criteria when judging Broncos quarterbacks, even backups. I see William Catalano saying the pick wasn't his fault. It got tipped at the line, and also he had a few drop balls. Well, William, would that same excuse apply to Drew Lock last year? You know, he still threw the pick. That pick still happened. He still made a mistake as the quarterback. And what you said, Chad, about an extra touchdown on Rippon, he did the first 2 games against the 3rd and 4th stringer. He wasn't starting. So that has to be taken into account as well. But like I said, if the Broncos go with him, if they feel like they want to keep grooming the guy they've had in the system for a couple years, fine. If Hackett wants the guy that he picked out of the open market, the well-traveled Josh Johnson, fine. It's the backup quarterback.
I will say it's probably going to be, it's relatively close between these guys. Like I'm sure it's going to be something of a debate in the meeting rooms deciding this. The Duchess jumping in. What's going on, Michaela? Legendary figure in the MHH lore. She says, I heard the Niners are releasing Jimmy Garoppolo. I wonder if he will be Seattle's new quarterback. Zach, what have you heard on this?
I haven't. I mean, it's fait accompli at this point. They can't find a trade partner and they have Trey Lance, but I haven't heard they're releasing him imminently. I'm sure it'll happen at some point, but even if he signed with Seattle, it's not enough time to learn the playbook and learn the offense and get chemistry down with the starters. If he signs with Seattle, it would be to start later in the year. It's going to be Geno Smith in week 1 against the Broncos, and boy, Talk about a juicy matchup.
I wonder what they're asking for, the Niners, in terms of compensation. Because I can't imagine after dangling him for as long as they have that I would guess they've come down whatever their initial price was, their initial ask. I'm sure they've come down. But if you look at his contract, like I'm looking at a headline right now on Google under the keyword Jimmy Garoppolo, Browns among favorites to land $137 million quarterback, whatever the Sam Hill that means. NFL teams, what they're actually trying to say to the Niners is, okay, you know, compensation is compensation, but we still have to pay this guy, and we don't think his current contract is feasible. But you would think on that same token, Zach, that if there was a team that really needed him, like I'm thinking Browns, like that headline suggests, I mean, they're going to be in a tight spot for half the season. Hey, will you accept a trade? Talk to Jimmy. Because you guys are this close to cutting him anyway, and that money goes bye-bye or whatever, would he accept a contract restructure? I would at least see about that, but again, not our problem. Right. I doubt if he does sign with Seattle, Michaela, I doubt, like Zach said, he's going to have enough time. You know, he is a veteran, I guess, you know, so we probably shouldn't put that past him. I mean, what is it, Zach? He's going to have about 3 weeks of real time, like if it happened today. Not quite 3 weeks, but close.
I mean, it's pretty much a two-team derby for Garoppolo, as far as I'm concerned. It's Seattle or Cleveland, and that kind of hurts the Niners' leverage because they want to move them and they can't dictate the terms. But, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe they would take a third-round pick and a fourth only because of the salary, like you mentioned. The Niners would want another team to take off his salary off their hands, and you can't ask for a second or first round pick and the salary on top of that. So again, not our problem, but I'm going to say like a couple draft picks, a third and a fourth, something like that.
Dude, I math so badly. We're talking like 2 weeks and a day or two is really what separates today from week one. Phil, what's good, brother? Thank you for being you, Phil. We love you. You're the man. Hashtag let's ride indeed. Speaking of that, let's check something out here as a collective group. We'll do some scratch and sniff. Everybody remembers those from when you were a little kid, right? Check this out. We'll just catch a couple minutes of it. Shout out to Albert Knoppers.
Everybody touchdown time. Let's go.
Congratulations. That was a hell of a job getting the good victory right there, and it was a team victory. That was awesome. That's what I love. Watching you guys come out there. Now, defense, that was some right there. You guys were getting after it. Offense, that run game was beautiful. But, hey, there's a couple things we just got to be sure everybody knows about. There's a guy in here that he hasn't had any action for 336 days. KJ Hamlin.
Now, run that was game. A lingering hug.
We had 148, 5.9 average, 25 carries. Great job. Boone had five carries for a 9-yard average. I see you, Boone.
Okay. So we're getting a feel, though, Zach, for the energy this in that locker room. Now, granted, it's a little bit, you could maybe say, artificially inflated because of the elation of a win, all right, preseason or not. But I still think it's probably a pretty accurate reflection of just the energy in that locker room. Like, and I love Hackett, dude. Like, I love him up there just like as excited about every little rah-rah moment as the player who was, you know, getting props for whatever, whether it's KJ or Boone or whatever. I just love to see that. It's an energetic lift, and my goodness, what a difference. Did you see how engaged everybody was, dude? Like, yeah, again, elation of the immediate aftermath of a win. But, like, when you go back and you watch any of Vic Fangio's very few victory speeches, he didn't have too many of them. But if you go back and critique them in comparison to what we just showed you, you will see that, hey, when a guy got his props, everyone was there to give him his props. And, yeah. But guys are, like, you know, kind of half listening as it's going, you know, taking off the tape or whatever. And I'm sure there was a little of that happening last night. But as the camera was panning around the room, go watch this on your own time. Zach, you're going to see everyone's like dialed in. They're like stoked on what's happening.
Well, did you notice that Nathaniel Hackett was moving around? He was, you know, showing move, you know, limberness, yes. Chad, and he was showing energy. He wasn't standing there addressing the team like this. It makes a big difference. We've talked about that for months and months. And if you were on the fence about Nathaniel Hackett, please, no more. I can't stand
it. Hold on. Where's I need likes? Hold on. I got my dip in my lip because
I'm having serious PTSD right now. But right. we don't have to worry about that anymore, Chad. We have the energetic Nathaniel Hackett around. And if you were on the fence about him, I mean, how were you not sold on this coach? What I love is, unlike Fangio, he mentioned defense off the bat. He's a full head coach. He's not just an offensive mind. I am so happy, though, for KJ Hamler. Can we talk about that for 1 second? Getting game action, coming off that knee, coming off that hip dislocation. They got him the ball, and he looked like the old KJ Hamler. Just the way that the head coach is embracing these players, treating them not just like they're football players, which they are, obviously, but men, but human beings. That's the element that Vic Fangio lacked in spades that Hackett has in abundance.
We'll come back, Albert, to Ozigbo here in a second. But to your point on Hamler, he looked twitchy. He looked, as Albert observes here, KJ was way too fast for Rippon's throws. My one critique of KJ is, I think, you know, it wasn't a great throw in the end zone, that interception. But I think KJ could have fought toward the ball a little bit better on that. That's me nitpicking, though. As the coach just pointed out, this dude hasn't been on the field in a real, like, live bullet sitch for bordering on a year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just happy he didn't get hurt. That was my biggest thing with KJ, is avoiding any sort of setback or re-aggravation. They got him the ball. They got what they wanted. They got some of the rust off, and he's going to pay off for the Broncos this year. It's his time.
Guero, what's going on, brother? Good to see you. Thank you for the super chat. You the man. He says, I was surprised by how comfortable Baron Browning looked. He looks like a natural. I think Seth Williams may have solidified a spot on the roster last night. I think the Broncos would be remiss, especially, Zach, in light of Brandon Johnson suffering that unfortunate ankle injury on the first snap from scrimmage. You get a high ankle sprain run blocking for Mike Boone as a wideout. I mean, that's just bad luck, but I liked what I saw from Williams. I think he makes the team. But talk about that, Zach, and talk about your impressions of Baron Browning, the edge rusher.
Ooh. I don't know. I'm much closer to admitting I was wrong about his conversion to OLB. You know, we harped on that for months, but he's looked damn good and damn natural as an outside linebacker in this defense. I would like to reserve a little judgment until I see him do it against starters in a regular season game and not third and fourth stringers. But Baron, that explosion, that twitch off the edge, man, it is evident. In terms of the receivers, I really have no idea where they're going to go. You can pretty much make a case for any of them. Kendall Hinton, you know, Tyree Cleveland, Jalen Virgil, even though Jalen Virgil kind of bobbled that kickoff return, it's not going to help him out too much. Interestingly enough, though, if you caught the end of the broadcast last night when they welcomed Mike Kliss to the booth, Kliss had his projections up on the screen, and underneath wide receiver, there was like a little subheading that said competing for roster spot. Brandon Johnson's name was not among that list. It was Seth Williams, Tyree Cleveland, and I think Kendall Hinton.
Yeah. Well, he had momentum. He had some momentum, Brandon Johnson, but it kind of dissipated after the first preseason game. And Kendall Hinton, for what it's worth, dude hasn't produced jack squat since preseason game one. He was on the field yesterday, Zach, for 56% of the offensive snaps. He had the ball go his way one time, unable to connect. It was an incompletion, for what it's worth.
that's your foil, is Kendall Hinton. We all have him, Chad. You know, it's just funny that you have
and
to
by the
stand
way,
against him.
I don't think you're wrong, or myself, about Baron Browning. We never said, hey, bold prediction, it's not going to work moving him to rush linebacker. We just expressed misgivings based on what we've seen in the past. Like, I'll speak for myself. I was anxious of the Broncos moving a guy that had showed out well. You know, that's one of the big differences here, Zach, between like the experiment of, say, DeMarcus Walker moving from hand in the dirt, 4-3 defensive end to stand up, 2-point stance, 3-4 rush linebacker, compared to Baron Browning, inside linebacker to outside, is that unlike DeMarcus Walker, Baron Browning had a season in the NFL of maybe not great inside linebacker play, but he had already shown you at his original position that you drafted him to play, that he can play ball. DeMarcus, you know, he didn't really show that, and then they moved him to stand-up rush linebacker, and it didn't really work out. So we had misgivings about it, is really what I'm getting at. I don't recall either of us standing up here and saying, mark our words, the Broncos will rue this decision.
Yeah, you're probably right. I probably made it a little more overdramatic, but we did say that it could be a grave mistake for Baron Browning's development and what the Broncos defense can do with the 11 players on the field. Great, great progress he's shown so far. I really hope he keeps it going into the regular season.
Andrew Baker, what's up indeed, bro? He says, I rooted for Drew Lock too, but sometimes the name on the back isn't good. So, hey, it's Russ versus his backup. Hashtag MHH for life. Yeah, he's going up against Gino, who he knows very, very well. Yeah, it's a bummer for Drew. You know, that's the problem. And you understand what the Denver Broncos, what John Elway saw in Drew as far as that arm and the upside and the athleticism. But once again, it's this between the ears stuff that ultimately separates the forgettable quarterbacks that fade off into the dustbin of history from those who stick and go on to have a lasting success. And it's not that Drew, I don't think, Zach, is lacking in football smarts. It's impulse control for whatever reason. That dude just struggles with impulse control. My 14-year-old son struggles with impulse control. Got to teach him. I got to learn him. Drew hasn't learned that.
Yeah, in a PG way, he's the ultimate groin tease, Drew Lock, because he'll follow up a boneheaded mistake like we saw for 3 years in Denver, 2 years, whatever, with a just a ridiculous touchdown throw like he proved in the Seattle game the other night. But it's not good enough. When you want to battle for a starting quarterback spot in the NFL, there's only 32 of those positions in the entire world, and you have to be on top of your game. You have to cut down those errors, and it's still same old Drew Lock. So Seattle's problem.
John Sandoval, thank you, buddy. Good to see you. Appreciate that super chat, my friend. Helping us to keep the lights on here at MHH. He says, I'm glad the Broncos have the run game going, but what's up with two players wearing 17? Yeah, that's been a problem for those of us, I mean, for fans and media alike, Zach, because, you know, when the service we use for images for our articles and stuff, it's USA Today, all right? And USA Today, they get a list of when they go to a game to take pictures of the roster. And, you know, there's, for example, multiple pictures right now in that, Zach, of Dylan Parham that is confused for Joe Schobert from one week ago because they both were wearing 48. The punter and Jalen Virgil, Corliss Waitman and Jalen Virgil both wearing 17. It's because of the NFL's decision to allow those weird smaller numbers, I think, is the biggest reason why they ran out of numbers. I don't know.
Yeah, every time I see 17, though, I don't know why I think of Deshaun Hamilton. I just can't unsee his name with that number. But that'll be cleared up in the coming days when the Broncos make their final cut, so won't be an issue.
GLP in the house. What's going on, brother? He says, Ajeem showed up. Go Broncos, let's ride. Yeah, let's talk about McKelvin Ajeem, Zach, because talk about forgettable up to this point. He had played himself off the roster. Question is, last night, I'll run through his stat line for you real quick here for those of you listening. Ajeem ended up with two solo tackles, a sack, two forced fumbles, one of which was scooped up by Baron Browning and returned to the house. Was that enough to save McKelvin Ajeem, a 2023rd round pick, his spot on the roster?
Man, it's the question is that one game enough to override his two bad games? And if, you know, it's subjective, it comes down to what the Broncos coaches think. If the Broncos can get that Ajeem on a weekly basis, he's worth a spot on the 53, but he's been so nothing. He's done nothing, really. He's been so invisible. That's the word I was looking for. And he popped yesterday, but he should pop considering his draft pedigree, his experience in the NFL now. I don't know, man. It's like, who would you cut to keep McKelvin Ajeem? You know, are you cutting Matt Henningsen, for example? I'm not.
Dude, look at this. Speaking of Henningsen, I don't know if you guys can see it that well, but see this image on the left under the Nick Benito story? That's the snap off the ball. Look at Henningsen jumping past. I mean, the edge guys usually are the guys that have the quick burst off the snap, right? The get off. Look at Henningsen, dude. He's like two or three heads ahead of all of his guys on the D-line on that snap. Like, I love that, dude. Henningsen, I think Henningsen, and, you know, you go back to the Hackett victory speech, talk about engaged. I mean, he's like watching the whole time. He's stoked. He's like, I like Henningsen. And Uwazurike showed out a little bit, you know, unfortunately had a sack erased by a bad, bless Austin, defensive holding penalty in the secondary. But I don't know. I think at the end of the day, they're probably not going to overthink this, and it's going to be McTelvin Ejim, Uwazurike, Henningsen. And they're just going to say, look, when we rotate through our D-line, we're gonna be inexperienced, but they're young, they're hungry, and they're energetic.
Wasn't Henningsen the player that Hackett compared him to from A Beautiful Mind because he's so smart? Or was that Wattenberg? I think that was Henningsen.
I don't remember now.
But he seems, regardless, like a very smart player. There was a play yesterday where I think the ball was blown dead when the Vikings offense was on the field, and Henningsen had the awareness of mind to like go for the ball and try to create a fumble. So you need those players, and he pushes the pocket. He's brains and brawn, and you can use a guy like that on your Broncos front line. I'm definitely keeping Henningsen.
Plus, like when a guy makes it all the way to the NFL and never had a free ride, like he's one of those walk-on success stories at Wisconsin. So is Greg Dulcich, for what it's worth. That tells you something about heart. And Henningsen, you know, you can't measure that. That's something that comes out on the wash in so many different ways. I think Henningsen's making this roster. Phil says, Locke and Bridgewater, Rippon and Johnson. Seems to be a correlation. Yeah, veteran and young guy. Veteran, young guy. Yeah, definitely. But Locke and Bridgewater, thank the goodness that is the football gods, that's not our problem anymore. George Fox says, and thank you, George, just think, 2 weeks from tomorrow, we start our march to the playoffs. Let's ride. Denver Broncos for life, MHH for life. Love that, George. Appreciate you as well. And then Howie saying, what's up? Let's ride. Zach, that's the thing is, we do have to wait 2 weeks. That's the bummer. But the next time Broncos fans watch their team take the field, you're going to get to watch Russell Wilson do his thing, and that's exciting.
I just got duped in the comments. Nick D said Sam Martin being traded to the Bills for a 2023 sixth rounder. I haven't seen that. I assume that's a play on the unfortunate situation going on with the Buffalo punter, Matt Areza. But I would like, if we can transition to the punting competition, Chad, the Broncos to move off Sam Martin, clear that money off the books, and go with Cortless Waitman, whose leg is more conducive, I think, to the Empower Field altitude.
Ooh, I just Googled that dude's name. I'm not even going to bring that up on this podcast because it'll get us flagged, but ugh.
Yeah, not
Howie,
good stuff.
You are the man, brother. Appreciate you. Was Corliss Waitman good enough to make you feel okay about, okay, all right, we're going to save $1.4 million on the cap. Let's move on from Sam Martin, because I'm not sure that he was. Like, in a game with a team now, Zach, where you're going to be competitive, and you're going to be in things at the end, no matter what. Like, if you're not like winning going away, you're going to be in every single game. And in those games, the margin for error is so small. You need every phase like executing and doing its thing. Do you want to risk it to an unproven punter, or do you want Sam Martin, who I get is not great, right? He's not established himself, despite the thin air of Mile High, as one of the game's better punters. But he at least is a competent veteran. Like, I don't worry about Sam Martin when they go out there to orchestrate a punt.
I don't know. I just feel like the money and the upside in Waitman is enough to move on from Martin. And I feel like Martin, you're capped with him. He's like a jag punter, where Waitman could be maybe an upper echelon punter. I'm looking at the numbers right now, though, to your point, Chad. Martin had two punts for 95 yards, one touchback. He averaged 47.5 yards a punt. Waitman had two punts for 81 yards, 40.5 yards per punt, though he did down one inside the 20. So, yeah, you're right. It's dealer's choice whether I hate pop-up ads so much. Whether, you know, he's an upgrade over Sam Martin, I just feel like the money, if you can clear that, and if you can maybe get an upgrade with Dwayne Stukes as the head, as the coordinator, I'm pulling that trigger.
So the final cut, the deadline is Tuesday, 2 p.m. Who are some of the guys that Broncos fans saw out on the grass yesterday, Zach, that you're pretty confident are going to be shown the door?
Oh, Sam Martin. I don't know. I think a lot of the players that are making the roster didn't play yesterday. Bless Austin for sure could go. He's shown me nothing. He allowed that. He had that penalty. He showed me nothing in coverage. That's one guy that jumped off the radar to me. Also, any offensive lineman for the Broncos, like the Quinn Baileys, the Zach Johnson types, you know, Calvin Anderson, those are, I don't know about Calvin, but those are guys that are definitely replacement level.
Okay, I'm going to throw a few names at you, and you just tell me if they survive, okay? Here we go. Luke Wattenberg.
Yes.
Quinn Bailey.
No.
Sobby, Eric Saubert.
Yes, I think so.
Kendall Hinton, Zach.
God, that's the toughest one to me. It's like, what do the Broncos do? Maybe make a call for Kendall Hinton's value around the NFL, see if you can flip him for a late-round draft pick. I don't know. You have Tyree as a core special teamer. If you want to keep Brandon Johnson, you want to keep Seth Williams, how do you justify keeping Kendall Hinton? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think he's done enough to stick, but he's just one of those guys coaches love because he's just such a unique character and a lunch pail type guy. I would let him hit the bricks. Graham Glasgow, there's no question in my mind, Zach. He's going to be on the roster. What about Calvin Anderson? You think he's pretty safe? Yeah. And Cam Fleming?
Yeah, because Calvin can play right or left tackle, and I think he has some value in the coach's eyes.
Brett Rippon, is he on this roster Tuesday afternoon?
Oh, man. Yes. I'll say they keep Rippon over Josh Jones. I'll go against my gut, yeah.
Jalen Virgil and Seth Williams. Which one of those guys survives?
I think if Dwayne Stukes has any influence, which he will, he's going to not be happy about that muffed kick return. So I think that could have done in Jalen Virgil. He'll be a practice squad guy, and we'll keep Seth on the 53.
Jaquan Hardy, Divine Ozigbo, they're both going to get waived. Question is, which one do the Broncos try to bring back to the squad?
Ozigbo looked pretty good. Not going to lie. Hardy's been
led the team in rushing for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Montrell's making it. Tomlinson?
No. I'll say they keep Andrew Beck over him as just a surprise.
Let's see. What about J.R. Reed, the safety, the veteran?
No. How could you justify that? P.J. Law, Caden Stearns, I think you're good there. Turner Yell is a hard hitter, though, man. Yeah. Practice squad guy for sure.
He reminds me a little bit of Will Parks in that.
Yes.
In the teeth guy. What about this guy? Was a bit of a revelation, Kaani Mauga, yesterday. I mean, he's not making this roster, but what were your thoughts on Mauga?
I think he looked pretty remarkable. The Broncos front seven was a major improvement from last week. Practice squad guy, though, you can't keep him on the 53.
Okay, let's talk some corners. All right, Bless Austin. You already said. What about McMillian? Jaquan McMillian.
Practice squad.
Isang Bassi.
I would keep McMillian on the 53 for Isang Bassi. Bassi showed me nothing, and I was a fan of his when he first came into the NFL.
What about the general, you know, the linebacker, Jeremiah Gemmel?
No, he'll be cut.
Cooper,
that's honestly, Chad, and he didn't actually play that well to me. That's the guy that I could see being a surprise cut or trade or something. They are flush at outside linebacker. I don't know about Jay Coop.
What about Fayon Hicks? I don't see it.
Yeah, I see practice squad.
Donnie Lewis, goodbye.
No.
Browning. Jonathan Kongbo, he of the CFL top five draft picks and CFL champion.
It's like, are you keeping Kongbo over Henningsen or Regime? I'm not.
What about Patrick, though? Aaron Patrick, that is.
We'll see how much Dwayne Stukes has to say, but I never saw what he can bring to the defense personally.
Any chance Alex Singleton is not making this roster?
I think he's pretty. He actually looked pretty well yesterday in coverage, so I think he makes it.
Yeah, Bobenoyer, man. A few heads-up plays he freaking botched, unfortunately. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all resolves. I'm curious to see ultimately, Zach, what their decisions are on at wide receiver, tight end. O-line, I think we know who's making it for the most part. It's a matter of how many are they going to carry? Because let's think about that. They can either carry 8, 9, or 10 as kind of teams shuffle through that. I'm trying to remember what they carried last year out of camp. But Bowles, Reisner, Cushenberry, Miners, Turner. All right, there's five. Graham Glasgow, he's making it. Natani Muti, I'm not sure, is making it. I think they might decide to go ahead and hit some kind of an injury designation on him and look to maybe bring him back somewhere in the season. Luke Wattenberg, I'm not sure he's shown enough to justify keeping him, but I wouldn't be surprised because he's a fifth-round pick. You know, he's a fifth-round pick. You try to keep those guys typically unless they really are in dereliction of duty. Calvin Anderson, Cam Fleming, Quinn Bailey. So who do you keep after you get past that starting five? You know, you could keep up to five dudes, but how many of them are going to be helping you on specials? I think they go light at O-line. I think they go nine max.
I agree with you because some of those guys can play guard and tackle as well. Don't forget Tom Compton, who's on PUP right now, right. But they are very excited about what he can do as well. So, yeah, I agree with you. They could go a little lighter and save a roster spot because you have position flexibility, which is always a great thing.
I'm curious to see how the roster math ultimately shakes out on the D-line, who stays. Rush linebacker, they do have a few tough decisions to make there, namely like Malik Reed, Jonathan Cooper. You're only keeping one of those guys. Who is? It's probably going to be Reed. But at the same time, maybe not. You know, there's an argument to be made, Zach, for now let's save ourselves the $2.5 million on the cap and move the cleanup sack artist, Malik Reed, because he's already tapped out. Like, he's already showed us what the limit of his potential is. Let's go with the guy with some upside. We don't want to risk him to the wire. Let's go ahead and keep Cooper. Like, there is an argument for both. It's about putting yourself in the mindset of these coaches, which one is the most attractive. If you try and put yourself in Nathaniel Hackett's shoes or better yet, Ajiro Evero, Reed doesn't play specials either. So, like, that's another argument for Cooper.
Cleanup sack artist. I like that. That's a new one. You know, if they don't want to keep Malik Reed, I am making a phone call if I'm George Payton, seeing what I can get for him. You know, he's a veteran. He has starting experience. He did lead the Broncos in sacks a few years ago. I wouldn't keep Cooper over Reed. I like what Reed can do if Chubb or Gregory get injured, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, to me, it's tough because it's such a top-heavy depth chart. You know, Bradley Chubb and Randy Gregory make for a fearsome duo, but then there's those inconvenient deckum caveats of if they stay healthy.
Yeah.
Hate having that part of the math here, but it is. Because of that, I think this team is going to err on the side of some veteran wherewithal, and that's why I do think ultimately Malik Reed is the one who sticks, along with, of course, Baron Browning and Nick Benito. And then, you know, Aaron Patrick might hang on by the skin of his teeth because he's one of those core special teamers, according to Coach Dwayne Stukes.
Yeah, I do wonder how many outside linebackers you're keeping, five or six, or I don't think you go above that number. But if they do keep an extra one for special teams alone, like you just said, Aaron Patrick could be that guy. But I feel like, you know, Reed, Cooper, when you have Baron Browning showing out like he is, you feel so confident about that if, God forbid, Gregory or Chubb were to go down, Baron looking like he does could be a, you know, day one replacement.
For apps and giggles here, I'm going to research what the Packers 53-man roster construction looked like out of camp. Let's see. Because I think it will help us inform, anyway, some of the thinking on the part of Nathaniel Hackett. Of course, George Payton, you know, he's going to have a lot to say about this. Announced 2021. Just real quick for craps and giggles. We're going to go to the – all right, so they kept two quarterbacks, three running backs. I see that happening again in the case of the Broncos. Six receivers, Zach, four tight ends, and nine O-linemen, okay? Defense, they kept six D-linemen, five inside linebackers, five rush linebackers. Can you see the Broncos keeping five inside linebackers, Zach? Because that's where I think they can justify keeping six rush linebackers, because you just hold on to Josie Jewell, Jonas Griffith, Justin Sternad, and Alex Singleton.
Yeah, but who is the fifth? Would it be Malga? I mean, is he that good enough to get on the roster? I don't know after one game. I would probably save the roster spot.
Cornerbacks, they kept six, and then four safeties for what it's worth. And I honestly, the only difference I can really see that jumps out to me and what I expect the Broncos to do is they kept five inside backers, five outside backers. I think they only keep four inside backers and they keep six rush linebackers. So it'll be interesting to see. Chief Big Belly, what's going on? Hail Priest, right back at you, bro. Those worried about the starters' lack of reps in the preseason, remember, we start the season with two subpar teams that should let them get into the groove before we face, quote unquote, real teams. Zach?
Yeah, on paper, they are softer teams. I should say Seattle and Houston, but, you know, every Sunday is a different story, and any given Sunday, anything can happen. And the Broncos, if they even do, which I think they will, beat both teams, they can't get too big a head. So they can't start puffing their chests out. It happened exactly last year. They went 3-0 after beating up on cupcake teams, and then reality hit them hard when they played a legitimate contender. So hopefully this year's Broncos team is different, but it will help their confidence, though, if they start 2-0, which, again, I think they should.
For what it's worth, real quick, George Payton kept 4 backs last year out of camp, 5 wideouts, 4 tight ends, 8 offensive linemen, 6 D linemen, 5 rush linebackers, 5 inside backers, and 7 corners, 5 safeties. So they went heavy on the defensive backfield last year, Zach, for special teams purposes. But that was with a completely different coaching philosophy and a completely different coaching staff. I don't think they go that heavy on corners this year. Although there is an argument for it, you know, because Ronald Darby and Kaywan Williams aren't the most reliable from a health perspective. So I could see them keeping that many. I just don't think they will this time.
I'm not keeping 5 safeties, though. You know, I want to keep another offensive lineman if I could, you know, if it comes down to that. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see based on this year's team what you can do. Fortunately, the players the Broncos are going to cut, a lot of them are practice squad guys that they can call up during the regular season if they have to.
All right, let's get back to the chat and take some topics and questions here. We're at about 40 minutes, so we got to start winding it down here. Zebulon says, did y'all see that Vikings punter? And 66, number 66 looks like a lineman. What about the Vikings punter? Did that jump out to you, Zach?
Every punt he had down inside like the 2-yard line. Their special teams was on point against Denver last night. So good for them, I'll say.
Not typically the mark of a rookie head coach. So shout out to, or props, I should say, to Kevin O'Connell. And shout out to Michael Ronquillo. It's great to see you, bro. Appreciate you being with us tonight, as always. Okay, let me see. I'm cruising down here. Ronnie says, do we expect that there may be any jersey number changes before game one? There will be, because I can promise you, you know, there'll be a guy or two who gets shown the door that was in possession of a jersey number coveted by somebody else or more convenient for their position or whatever. It happens every year. There's usually 3 or 4 different jersey changes, Ronnie, when the 53 officially gets announced.
As long as number 1, number 2, number 3 don't get changed. Hamler, PS2, and Russell Wilson. Those are my favorite numbers on the Broncos.
I love it. Here's one from Mile High Mike. Says, who's our starting tight end? As Albert O. is still learning how to block properly. It's a really good question because he's listed number 1 on the initial depth chart, which you can't really jump to too many conclusions on an initial depth chart like that before the first preseason game. But I don't think he's viewed as the tight end 1. I think he's viewed as the tight end 1 receiving tight end. They're going to use him like crazy on third down and second longs and stuff like that. But, Zach, when the rubber meets the road, and you saw how elated Hackett was last night to talk about a productive running game, is a running game, even with the ones out there, guess what? Those ones, they're going against 1 defenses. So is that offense going to produce at that level on the ground, Zach? If Albert O's out there, I have my doubts blocking, right? Tomlinson, freaking road grading if he makes the roster. Eric Saubert, significantly more competent as a blocker. I don't know who the tight end 1 is going to be. I don't think it's going to really matter. It's not going to be like the last few years when it was clear Noah Fant was your tight end 1. I don't think it's going to be quite that meaningful this time around. It's more nominal than anything.
Exactly. Remember in the last couple years of purgatory, we saw those depth charts that had co-quarterbacks on it, but they didn't want to name a starter. I think we could see co-tight end ones in Denver this season. They're going to divvy up the reps between Albert O, Dulcich when he gets healthy. They have Saubert, who looks like a capable player, especially as a blocker. They have Andrew Beck if they keep him on the roster. It's going to be the sum of all their parts at that position, not necessarily, like Chad said, a clear-cut tight end 1.
Great member of our community, and he owns a fair amount of lore in MHH as well. Dave Glassman, do we unexpectedly cut someone to pick up a corner off waivers? So do you see a unexpected cut, and if so, for a corner, Zach?
I don't know that you cut 1 for 1. The Broncos are going to make cuts, and there's going to be cornerbacks that get cut around the NFL. It depends on how you look at the position. I don't think it's a five-alarm fire at cornerback for the Broncos. They have some players they can get behind, younger players. I think I'd rather roll the dice on Jaquan McMillian, who's been in the Broncos system this offseason, than gamble on a guy from another team. Theon Hicks, another one as well. So they're going to have some guys they're going to have on the practice squad in the farm system. I think they're going to be just fine there, honestly. I'm not too worried.
Dude, how rad was it, though, seeing a gadget play work well with Montrell Washington? Yeah. And we heard from Nathaniel Hackett going into the half that that was a play that O-line coach Butch Berry had been pounding the table to run. Loved seeing that. And then just, man, you get the ball in that dude's hands and you scheme him, the scheme coming from competent NFL offensive minds. I'm really excited to see what the future holds for Washington, for KJ, as far as some of those gadget plays. Like, that got me going. I know it's a small thing, but, like, that was very encouraging to see, because usually that kind of stuff, Zach, they keep in reserve, you know, because they're not going to show any kind of hand like that in the preseason.
We haven't seen anything like that in 3 years, at least. It's so refreshing. You get the ball into a game-breaking player's hands. What are they going to do? They can break the game open. What a concept. But I think Montrell Washington's position, don't box him in at one spot. It's not kick returner or wide receiver. It is offensive weapon, like the college ranks. That's what Montrell will be. And I'll say it once more, what Isaiah McKenzie should have been during his time in Denver.
I want to grab Raul here, who's a great supporter and member of our community on Facebook. He says, completely random comment, in the light of recent snubs to Randy Gradishar, Mike Shanahan, and Dan Reeves for the Hall of Fame, it crosses my mind that defensive coordinator Joe Collier, architect of the Orange Crush, definitely deserves consideration for the Hall of Fame, will never make it into it. Yeah, he's in the hall of the very good. He's the guy that was the hall of the, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Not quite on the level of a Reeves, not right. Even close, in my opinion. Like, Wade Phillips, more of a Hall of Fame name than Joe Collier. And I get it, that Orange Crush 77, that was him. He was the brainchild. And I'm not trying to sell him short in any way, shape, or form. Like, props to him. I think he was one of the best defensive minds of his day. The problem is, it never came out in the wash as a head coach. And that's really who gets in. Zach, I don't even know if Joe Collier ever did serve as a head coach. I'm going to Google it real quick, but another example, I think, of the Hall of Very Good, and that's no slight against him.
No, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer in Broncos country, but if Mike Shanahan couldn't get in, or Dan Reeves or Randy Gradishar, players with a better resume and more name value, especially Mike Shanahan, I mean, what a snub that was. I don't see it for Joe Collier. So it's one of those things where we have to just hope that these fringe candidates for the Broncos, the not slam dunk first ballot types, the Hall of Fame committee can just see what they've done and put them in their proper place in Canton. But every year, it seems like they don't want to do that.
For what it's worth, my dude is 90 years old, plugging along. But he was a head coach. He head coached the Bills from 66 through 68. And then Denver's DB's coach for a spell before becoming the defensive coordinator from 1972 through 1988. So he coached 1, 2, 3 Bronco teams to the Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator. And so, you know what? To me, that's like, hey, maybe consider him for the Ring of Fame at some point, but not quite on the par of Hall of Fame resume, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I agree with what Dave said here. We talked about this at length last week. Don Coryell, to me, I know you might disagree a little bit, Chad. He was deserving.
I don't disagree that he wasn't deserving. I agree that he was deserving. Don't get me wrong.
He's a legendary figure, but what I don't like is that it had to come at the expense of a Mike Shanahan or a Dan Reeves. It had to be an either or, when you can argue that Mike Shanahan is either as deserving or more deserving than Eric Coryell. So it's definitely disappointing. Sorry.
Dude, check this out. Kennedy, the producer, chopping wood for us. Quick stat. I just checked. There are 6 NFL teams who have 2 running backs who make more than Mike Boone. There are as many that don't have 1 who make as much as Mike Boone. So it goes back to the lament, Zach, that they're really overpaying for their third string running back. But I'm not losing sleep over that, because look how good he was in that game. Like, if you have to turn to him, It's a nice little bit piece of insurance if push comes to shove.
You could do so much worse than having Mike Boone as your RB3. I thought he should have been RB2 before they re-signed Melvin Gordon. Anytime he's been on the field, the guy is electric. Get him the ball, please, Coach Hackett.
Word. Guys, shout out to the Queen dropping in real quick. Christy, it's great to see you. I hope you've been doing well. Thanks for dropping the line.
Good to see you, Christy, as always. Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been a fun conversation. We'll be back tomorrow for the Monday night edition of this show. We'll look forward to talking with you all then, but we got some matters of business, so don't leave.
Yeah, the aftermath tomorrow. Be sure to check that out. We're off until then, guys. Follow us on Twitter at HuddleUpPod. You can follow the main account on Twitter at MileHighHuddle, Chad at Chad and Jensen, myself, Kelperman NFL, and Scott at Scout Kennedy. If you guys want some merch, HuddleUpPod.com. Get yourself some merch. All right there. New inventory, new website. I promise, well worth your time. And Facebook.com/MileHighHuddlePod. Like that page. Follow that page. If you haven't, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave your football priests a 5-star review for a chance to win some merch each and every single month. But as you see ticking below you now, please subscribe, like, and share this video and every video you see on the MHH channel. It really helps us grow and reach more Broncos fans just like you.
Shout out to these great supporters on Facebook tonight. Gary Leeds Palmer, Andrew Lampe, Phil McLaughlin, Howie Frickin' Day, George Fox, Andrew Baker, and then also our great Super Chat superstars. We love you so much. Sam Bam throwing down. The Duchess throwing down. Huero, John, Chief Big Belly. Each and every one of you that I just mentioned, you guys help keep this content flowing daily. And for that, we thank you. We appreciate you so, so much. And we look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Take care, guys. And as always, go Broncos.
You've been listening to the Huddle Up Podcast. Join Broncos Country's deep divers at milehighhuddle.com to keep the conversation going.